power of silence. Okay, a couple of weeks ago, I was at Spring Ridge Farms having lunch with a couple of friends. It was a beautiful day. We were out having our lunch on the picnic tables where everyone can have their lunch. And there was a cage with some chickens in it. And, you know, it's a very farm atmosphere, very pastoral. It was lovely. Then a group of little children came along who were aged between 5 and 10, and they were probably part of a day camp because you could see there were two counselors with them. Anyway, they were looking at the chickens, but they weren't just looking at the chickens. They were screaming at the chickens, full-on screaming at the chickens. The counselors were feebly trying to distract them from this horrible practice. The chickens were obviously unhappy with the noise, for they were running with agitation back and forth in their little cage. The teacher in me flared to anger, and my first reaction was to go over and clock them all. But that's probably a symptom of my post-traumatic stress from being having been a teacher, high school teacher, for 34 years. But that would have got me nowhere other than on the next Twitter feed in some kind of video that would go viral with me and my anger. I didn't do that. Instead, I sauntered up to the group, actually thinking, I'm not going to do anything. No, don't do anything. You're no longer a teacher, Mary. Just walk on by. But I couldn't help myself. So I went right up to them, and I started to whisper. And I said, we have to respect the animals. We really have to respect the animals. Well, at first, those kids walked, like, backed away, thinking, who's this crazy woman coming up and talking to us? But they did stop screaming, and they warmed to what I was saying. And so we took a moment and talked about the colors of the chicken, and look at their little beady eyes. Aren't they funny? And one of the boys said, yeah, that chicken, in fact, it was a rooster, that chicken barked at me. Well, I was actually stymied by that, and I couldn't think of the word clucked, so I just said, oh, yeah, really? Anyway, I don't know if they appreciated a quiet, talking stranger coming up to them to, you know, quiet them down, but the urge to turn down the noise was so powerful that I had to try. This year, more than any other of the years that I've been doing this, standing up and pretending that I know what I'm talking about, I was really having trouble finding a topic. There's so much going on in the world, and many things were going on in my head that I was getting frustrated and confused by all the possible themes that I could present to you today. I was basically thinking too much. Then, shortly after the chicken incident, I came into the church to practice the piano, and there was nobody in here, and it was calm and beautifully silent. And I thought, this sanctuary gives me an idea. I thought maybe I should explore the theme of silence. I know. Most of you are going, Mary, silence. I have had lots of people kind of laugh at that idea. In fact, I do remember one time having to be in a yoga class where we had a silent lunch, and I thought I was going to go crazy because you can't eat and not talk. I know that one person pointed out how ironic it was in not being able to find the topic, I chose to not talk, silence. And Ian even said, oh good, does that mean you're not going to talk for a while? Thanks, Ian. So no, I'm going to talk lots. The image of those chickens reaching to the screaming children makes me think of all the extraneous noise that bombards us in our society today. And we are very much like those gobsmacked chickens running to and fro in our cages. The constant connection with news, fake or otherwise, the unease created by political leaders who don't know how to lead properly or truthfully, the changing trade deals, the Brexit in the UK, continual unrest in Syria, the clash over protests in Hong Kong, ever more shootings in the United States, unexplained murders in our own British Columbia. Oh, and by the way, what's going on with North Korea at this point? You know, there's just so much. If you want to be connected, you can be 24/7 connected to this bombardment. But our brains, our minds, and our spirits are suffering from overload. Have you ever returned from a holiday where you haven't heard any news for a week or even just a few days? And when you come back and you hear your first news broadcast, you feel like all your senses have been assaulted? Can you think of other examples of where the noise in our world is just too loud for you? You don't have to answer that. If I were Alan, I would say, go ahead, shout it out. I'll shout some out for you, unless you do have one you want to say. Randa?
Exercise classes.
Oh, exercise classes, where they yell at you.
Where they think that they have to pay the music.
Yes, that's right. Exercise classes where they play the music so loud that you have to do your exercises with your ears covered. Yes, I know what that is like. Anyone else? Yes, Donna, that's actually one of my first points. The restaurants, when the music is far too loud. You can't talk, right?
Traffic. You can't drive in the window.
It's too loud. Yes. Yes? As long as there's no cage with chickens in it. It's true. Many of us have been there and know what that's like. It's true, and I think, you know, these days I find I get easily irritated by extraneous noise. That could be my age, because they do say as you get older, your filter for extraneous noise gets thinner, so it does bother you more, which explains why young people can go to those all-night clubs and listen to that pounding music all night long. We wouldn't make it for more than 2 minutes, except for maybe five people who are here younger than 30. So I have here, yes, the restaurants. Also in my own apartment, I would actually rather suffer the heat and humidity than to turn on the noisy air conditioner, because I really can't stand that loud whirring fan that happens to be in our apartment. Have you gone to the movies? And have you noticed that half hour of ads before they actually get to the feature film is played at the loudest volume possible? I find myself having to actually, I do it very surreptitiously, but I cover my ears because I can't stand the noise. Boy, I am sounding old. Did you ever drive into Toronto or even go in on the subway, and when you got back, you have to go into a quiet room? Just having been in the big city for a day or even in a couple hours, I just have to go to a quiet room and just be calm and quiet. So, it seems my need for quiet, for silence and tranquility has been steadily increasing with age. Thankfully, unlike those poor chickens, we can leave our cages in search of silence. For example, last fall I started the practice of forest walking. I like calling that forest walking, because it has a Game of Thrones ring to it. Forest walker. Anyway, I started walking for 2 or 3 hours in one of the many forests around here. We are so blessed with the, you know, the RBG and trails, the Bruce trails that are all over the Burlington-Hamilton area. So 2 or 3 times a week, or even 4 times a week, I would try to do that. In the forest, you all know this, but it's lovely to revisit it. All your senses are rewarded. Your ears thank you for the lack of man-made noise. There's no motors or fans, just the birds, the wind, and the creaking trees. Your eyes thank you for the beautiful colors and shapes that change with each season. Your sense of smell is rewarded with the scent of earth, leaves, and greenery, and fresh air. And you can touch the rough or smooth bark of various trees, or your hand can brush through the tall grasses as you pass by. Not only are your senses calmed by these forest walks, but also your mind is able to slow down to concentrate on just walking, one foot in front of the other. Just be in the moment. Finding a place for silence allows you to get closer to your true self. Another way of finding silence is through meditation. Have any of you tried meditation? Some of you, there's kind of this going on. A few years ago, I took a 10-week meditation course from a friend of mine. She was training to become a meditation teacher. So we were her guinea pigs, and she had for free a 10-week meditation course. Her name is Mojda Rustami. She is really good, and her lessons are excellent. But the classes were held after school on a Wednesday. Any teachers in the class would know, or in the congregation will know, Wednesday is a tough day. And so it was on a Wednesday. I'd go up to this meditation course, and after she spoke for half an hour, we would start to meditate, and I would immediately fall asleep. Basically, I figured that I had failed at meditation. She said, no, you obviously needed to sleep. And I did pick up the basics. I found myself able to use those techniques in times of stress. One time I was in New York with school kids, and the kids themselves had a couple hours to do their own, this is high school, so they had their 2 hours of free time to go to a restaurant and eat, and the teachers, myself and a few others, had free time too. My friends went off, and we agreed to meet at one intersection. And I thought, okay, no problem. I did my little thing, I was there waiting for them, and I started to panic, thinking, I might have the wrong intersection. Oh no, what if I have the wrong intersection? What if I miss them? What if? What will the students say? And well, I started to really ramp it up. You probably have had moments like that. And then I thought, no, just be calm and use that visualization technique that Mojda taught me, where you visualize you come above your body and you look back down at your body. Meanwhile, there's people, this is New York City, people rushing back and forth, back and forth, the traffic, and I was looking at myself, and all it looked like to me was I was a solid stationary pole standing amongst all those people running around. And as soon as I could see that I was that solid, calm pole, my mind calmed, the image made me feel tranquil, and my friends arrived at that intersection. I had the right one, everything was fine, all was well. This incident reminds me of a lovely saying that I like to live by, if possible. And I think it's in your bulletin, but I didn't check. This I have hanging in my kitchen. And it goes like this. Peace. It does not mean to be in a place where there is no noise, trouble, or hard work. It means to be in the midst of those things and still be calm in your heart. Where do you find a quiet place? I'll let you think about that. But you don't have to yell it out. Everyone's circumstances are different. If you live in a house with a busy family, coming and going, the radio's on, the TV's on, the video games are going all the time, you might need to get out and go for a walk. Get out and get into nature to find silence. On the other hand, if you live alone, you may find or feel that you are surrounded by silence too much, and it can be lonely. But there is a difference between empty silence and a silence that is filled with meaning. Having a sense that God is with us can help fill silence with meaning. When traveling, if you find yourself overwhelmed by the rush and noise of a strange city, walking into a church, a cathedral, a place of worship can bring a silence and calm to your mind, and it can restore your energy. And also cemeteries, strangely enough, can be very calming too, because, you know, it might bring back memories of loved ones, and that can be a calming silence that will also give you comfort. Another point about silence is that it's a powerful tool of communication. As teachers, we were taught that if you ask a question and you don't wait for the answer, you cheat the listener, that is the student, out of a chance to think. And I know that was my problem. I would ask a question, wait for the answer, like for 1 second, and then I'd basically give the answer. I had to learn to wait and to have silence after the question. This point reminded me of a time when I was teaching grade 9 French to a particularly difficult group of students. They were a challenge every day of that semester, except for one day. On Halloween that year, I dressed up as Marcel Marceau. Remember the man who made the French mime artist famous? I had the black pants, the striped shirt, the red tam. I painted my face white. I had the black teardrops or triangles drop from my eyes. And I conducted all the classes that day, and particularly that difficult class, in mime. I didn't speak a word throughout the classes. Luckily, I had a student teacher with me who did talk a little bit and translated from time to time for me. But for the most part, my lessons were silent. And a marvelous thing happened. The students paid attention. They didn't act out. They brought their voices way down. And it was the best class of that year. I even had students come to me years after at school reunions, and they would see me and meet me and say, "Hey, miss, do you remember when you dressed up as a mime and you didn't talk the whole day? That was cool, I remember that." And I was thinking, wow, isn't that interesting? That's the class that they remember the most. The power of silence. The flip side to silence, by stopping your talking, you also improve your listening, your ability to listen. The American psychologist Dr. Kurt Smith writes that silence can be a vehicle of expression. It gives others a chance to speak and us the opportunity to listen, think, and reflect. He goes on to say, the goal of communication should be to share information, and reach a decision, not to win. Politicians would do well to know this point. Being silent at times not only reduces the noise, but also speeds up resolution. For example, the use of knee-jerk reactions in the form of tweets from certain presidents only adds to the noise. Also, news that is reported before it is fact-checked also adds to our noise. Perhaps a moment of silence before speaking would improve relations of nations. Of course, when I say we need more silence, I am not referring to a silence that strangles the truth. I don't mean that people should remain silent in the face of injustice and abuse. Passive-aggressive people use silence in an abusive way to express anger or to punish their partner. That's not the type of silence that we need. I'm talking, of course, about a restorative silence, one that allows you to get in touch with your inner self, to contemplate a better response to a situation, to hear the voice of reason, perhaps the voice of God. A silence that allows you to renew your energy and sense of peace. Jesus retired to the desert for 40 days and nights, where no doubt the silence would have been difficult, especially since he was fasting during that time. However, this journey allowed him to explore the path that he was destined to take, responding to the devil and his temptations three times. He needed to have a meaningful silence to restore his own convictions, to go back into the world to share his knowledge of God. If you are needing silence to restore your own convictions, you can find it in nature by standing in a power that is greater than yourself, or just by breathing meditatively. As Ron Mellish mentioned in his sermon in July, the act of breathing helps you to be calm and to restore your sense of balance. After you have restored your energies and your convictions, after you have regenerated your energies from a simple silent talk with God, perhaps you will have a renewed strength to handle the extraneous noise. Maybe you will have a clearer sense of what your path should be. Do you join the noise that is just sound and fury signifying nothing? Or will your voice have meaning, a whisper that can bring peace and calm to others? And I'd like to end with a quote that John Anderson drew to my attention just yesterday when he heard that I was doing The Power of Silence. A friend of his posted on his Facebook just yesterday that fit perfectly a saying, and here's how it goes. A seed grows with no noise, but a tree falls with huge noise. Destruction has noise, but creation is quiet. This is the power of silence.